Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. And we're back, folks. Sorry I missed you all last week. A lot of busy stuff going on. Life gets in the way a little. Planning a big wedding here for September, so I just had to take the break to kind of figure out a lot of the stuff in the personal life. I missed you guys. I hope you were okay last week without me. I'm sure you all were fine, but we are back, and I'm happy to be recording another show, and we have a fun one here. I'm not going to talk too much about this past weekend's UFC Vegas 102 or this coming weekend's UFC Seattle. Not too much going on those cards. I do think a solid main event between Henry Cejudo and Song Yadong in Seattle, but not something I felt the need to dig too much into. And went another way with the topic of today's show with a returning guest, one of my favorite, Mr. Luke Thomas, is going to come back. We had a great show back in December. We're going to do another rankings here today of the most valuable UFC fighters as we sit here currently today in February of 2025. Who are the most important things, who are making the company work, who they can rely on, who they can promote, who they can put forward. If I was starting my own promotion, who are the top fighters that I would pick to come along with me to build around? And I think Luke and I had some great insights, a little bit of varying lists here, but it was a lot of fun kind of talking about the biggest names in the sport, how we think they stack up, and what we think kind of the short-term and long-term value of these guys are. So appreciate everyone coming back here after the week off. A lot of fun with Luke. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back to rank the most valuable fighters in the UFC in 2025. We are back here on the Bonfire with a returning guest of the show, Mr. Luke Thomas. Luke, so good to have you back. What can we say? The numbers speak it all. The best podcast I put out to date was your first appearance where we ranked the best pay-per-views of 2024. So we had to have you back here. You're a draw, my friend.
No, nowhere to go but down. So we'll see how this goes. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. Appreciate you being back. And, you know, kind of in the same vein as what we did last time, going to rank some more things. And, you know, speaking of a draw, I think it goes on to that same vein as well. I talked about a little bit in the intro, but kind of going to break down who, like, the UFC's most valuable fighters are right now, because I think a lot of talk about, like, this next era, who are going to be the big pay-per-view draws, who are they going to build the company around. As we did this experiment, noticed a lot of these fighters are aging as well, which I thought was curious. So, I know kind of on your end, I said to pick like your top 10 on who you thought maybe some of the most viable guys will be for the company for these next few years. And just for like context for, I guess, the viewers, like all the stuff can change on one result, one loss, one win. It's kind of a snapshot in time as we come right here. Like this could obviously change as we go, but I thought it was a fun experiment, I guess, off the top before I start kind of getting into things. How did this research and the homework I gave you go for this list?
It went pretty well. Let me pull this up here, because what ended up really surprising me from this list is, again, everyone's going to be a little bit different. You gave me clear guidelines, but even within those guidelines, there's just going to be a significant amount of latitude about what direction you could go. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm looking through my top 10, and I did not do this on purpose. I promise. I just ended up this way. I don't have a single American in my top 10.
Wow.
I don't have a single American in my top 10. Now, again, it's not to say that you couldn't do that. And in fact, you probably might have it. And also, you're Canadian. This is not probably as forward a concern necessarily for you. But it's just strange. You know, 10 years ago, almost all the champs were either Brazilian or American. And now, obviously, many are still top. Outside of my top 10, I've got a lot of Americans. Mm-hmm. But inside that top 10, I don't really have any. And I just think that speaks on the plus side to the vast internationalization that has happened in MMA. On the downside, I just wonder if we're getting the same kind of elite American fighters and athletes that we once did. I don't know how to answer that question.
Yeah, that's definitely like a whole other topic we could go into, the stalling of what seems like, you know, top collegiate wrestlers coming into MMA and, you know, especially the UFC. But yeah, I mean, I look at my list here, I have two American born athletes. So yeah, okay. It's definitely in similar vein to you. But I expanded just because, you know, this experiment kind of took me for a bit of a loop. I ended up just listing more and more people. So I did a top 30 here, and I'm just going to start reading them off kind of in tiers here as we get up to 11. And then ultimately we'll go into your 10 and mine. So I called this first tier Little Time Left and On the Way Out. Number 30, okay. I had Dustin Poirier, 29, Kamaru Usman, 28, Justin Gaethje. My next tier was could be big, but still uncertain. 27, I had Patty Pimblett. 26, okay. I had Bo Nickel.
Okay, I have... you know what? I'm not going to interrupt you unless I have one inside my top 10. I do not have any inside of top 10 yet.
Okay. Next tier was current champions, still of use. 25, I had Valentina Shevchenko. 24, I had Alexandre Pantoja. 23, I had Bilal Muhammad. 22, I had Mirab Dvalishvili. And then the next tier was potential future champions with upside. Number 21, I had Kayla Harrison. Number 20, I had Shavkat Rakhmonov. Number 19, I had Umar Nurmagomedov. I'll let you stop me there.
Yeah, so I've got, I won't say which ones, but I've got two of those in my top 10.
I debated moving them actually higher than this next tier, but I ultimately put them below. But yeah, you could have had that group at 13, 14, and 15 if you really wanted them, which would have been obviously closer to your 10. But my next tier here was ex-champions who still have tread. And 18, I had Brandon Moreno. 17, Leon Edwards. 16, Robert Whittaker. 15, Sean Strickland. 14, Israel Adesanya. 13, Alexander Volkanovski.
Okay.
And then my last group here before the top 10 was the I guess so group. And I just put them in there because I feel like I guess so. And we kind of had to. And that was a two-person group. Number 12, Conor McGregor. And number 11, John Jones. Just because, I mean, we could talk about them. Like, they could be one and two if you wanted to do this list a certain way. But like, as we're talking maybe beyond one fight for the next 5 years or so here, like, does anyone expect those guys to either have more than one fight max?
Also, even, I mean... I don't know how the future is going to go, but you're talking about two guys where you could get a sum total of zero fights going forward between them. It's not that they're not obviously the biggest names that we have on the roster to the point you indicated, but if we're forecasting for the future and trying to assess who's valuable, they're valuable maybe for the next year at most. And then after that, they turn back into a pumpkin, it seems.
Exactly. And like, you know, those guys are obviously commanding extremely high paydays as well. So, you know, one of the kind of notes I sent you is like, if you had to start this thing from scratch and maybe look at financials and how you build something, like those two guys might be a short-term game for a long-term pain type of thing. Like you never know what you're going to get out of it. So I guess first question off that, did you have both or either of those guys in your top 10?
I did not have, I went, based on what you're saying, I think that our top 10 is going to be mostly overlapping, but I went hardcore youth. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, again, you can get one big fight left out of John, maybe. I mean, I guess in theory you can get two, but I don't know if we're really going to get there or not. And then with Connor, it just seems at best speculative about what he's going to get back. And even if he gets back against, I don't know, a Nate Diaz trilogy, which would be a legitimately very big fight, what condition is he going to be in? What's he going to look like? If he gets beat up, is he going to do this again? It's just, you know, there's just so much uncertainty. So I'm trying to bank on people who are either yet to blow up or have blown up some, and that gives you some indication of what the future might look like.
Maybe if this was a BKFC list, you'd put Connor at number one. He seems more, seems way more passionate about that than MMA at this point. I mean, I don't blame him. If you were him trying to get into a combat fight, I'd rather do the one where you only have to throw hands as opposed to defend takedowns and kick on that leg and stuff. But I don't know. Do you think he's like, is he just promoting this brand? And every time he gets a mic, yeah, I'm going to fight for BKFC. Like it helps the overall aura of the company saying he's going to be there. Or do you think like, I know there's so much contractual stuff before we,
yeah, I mean, my bet. Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry to cut you off. Read is that I think there is a part of him that sincerely wants to do it, but there's probably a part of him that tells himself I'm going to get back to fighting soon. And I'm going to be, you know, a big name in the game again. And it's like, there's a little part of him that's speaking to that, but that's not necessarily what the major part of what he is doing, nor how he is occupying his time. And to the point you raised, he still has two fights left on his UFC deal. You have to get through that before, or they would have to just release you, which I cannot imagine they would do very easily. So, you know, couldn't rule it out. Certainly couldn't rule it out, but it's hard to rule it in right away.
Mm-hmm. And then just on Jones, since we don't talk about him too much in the top 10, has your temperature changed at all since I think we kind of talked a little bit about it in December? Like, it doesn't really seem like any progression has been made or anything like that. Tom Aspinall is pretty silent out there. He's not making the ducking videos anymore, which I think you could take maybe as a positive sign. Like, Tom, your side's done. We're talking to John. Just be quiet and we'll, you know, get this deal done. But I don't know. What's your temperature right now?
I maybe slightly less than 50-50. It was probably 50-50 or so before. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, he's got that video that came out over the weekend where he was like, it appeared that he was not sober, rambling onto Instagram Live. And it's like, you know, in the past, none of that has even ever really derailed him. He's like kind of done all that stuff and it still didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But now he's in a different stage of his life. And so I don't know exactly how much that will impact him. I would still say there's a decent chance we get that one. But again, it's just really hard to count on any of these things happening. That's the hard part.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, we know the date for International Fight Week now. They announced that. I think a lot of people were maybe circling that one, but we're already mid-February. I know compared to last year, we didn't get an International Fight Week main event till like, a month or so before, if that. So I guess they're not too much against the wall. But I assume if they want to make that fight as big as possible and do it on that date, you'd want to announce it sooner than later.
For sure. I mean, and again, people have said, how big could that fight be? And it's not to say that Jones versus Poatan as the alternative wouldn't be a monster fight. Of course it would be, but it's not nearly as, again, on paper, it's not nearly as good of a fight as the Aspinall one. And it's also a title unification. And here we are talking about the future of the sport. That's a great way to invest in it because Poatan, again, probably doesn't have the wrestling and is also 37 years of age. He's just in a very, very different kind of position. So to me, I'm not going to say it's make or break. I don't think that's quite right, but they could do themselves and that division and Tom Aspinall quite a bit of good if they got out in front of it. But again, it takes two to tango. I'm sure it's not Tom Aspinall, the one who's holding up the works. You know what I mean? Like, I doubt that's the guy that they have to really convince.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident as well. And the heavyweight division needs this fight so badly. I mean, I listed out a 30 there. Spoiler alert, there'll be one heavyweight in my top 10. It is Tom Aspinall, and then no one else to be found on the list minus Jones. So yeah, right. That division in a little bit of a tough spot. But okay, Luke, let's get into it. I will let you open things up here. Who did you have at number 10 on your list?
So again, I want to be clear about the methodology that I'm going on here. I'm not going on necessarily the guys that have had unimpeachable runs to this point, although some of them have, and the ones who haven't are at least pretty close. I'm banking on, again, to the way you which had described it to me, which is you're trying to plan for the future, and imagine you had to kind of reset. Who are you going to build around? Obviously, we just saw the bantamweight title fight, but the champion who won is 34 years of age. Now, granted, he might age uniquely well in this one, but I really wanted to forecast for the future. So I actually went number 10, Umar Nurmagomedov. I'm not saying Umar Nurmagomedov is better than Merab. We just kind of saw that he wasn't, at least not right now. But he wasn't that far behind. I know a lot of folks are kind of imagining that Umar got run over. He did not get run over. He got beaten, but he didn't get run over. He's 29 years of age. There actually seems to me there's a lot of time left to build in him where Merab is going to get deep into his late 30s here relatively soon. And it's just hard to know what you're going to get with that. Whereas with Nurmagomedov at 29, you've got a little bit more to plan on. And I also think that because he is so well-rounded still, that's going to be better than a Sean O'Malley, who again is obviously an American, has an electric knockout power or ability at a bare minimum, but has lopsided skill sets relative to what Umar has. So I went 10. I went Umar.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice. I mean, as I said, I could have had him as high as 13 if I had switched those tiers there. He's 29 years old, which if you look over the ages of probably most of the people we're going to talk about, that is a rare perk on his end. And yeah, we saw how good he was in that fight. Both of those guys fought that in unideal circumstances. I'd love to see that fight again with proper training camps, no weird injuries that they came in with. I think Umar, definitely the future of the division, has the Nurmagomedov last name. We know that's important to, you know, help promote and put on posters and stuff. So yeah, I thought he was an easy choice. It's just a matter of where exactly you were going to rank him. So I thought that was a good one. On my 10, this is one I felt a little unsure about given the age, and it is actually the only female on my list in my top 10. I put Zhang Wali just because I know she is 35 years old, but you know, if you're looking to make money, if everything they say about what she does numbers wise in China is true, the money and the revenue they get from her, that seems like a huge chess piece to have on your side. The age, definitely concerning at 35, but if she's beating the girls the way that she's beating them, seems like she could stay on top for a while. The only thing that would give me pause is, you know, she moves up to 125, loses badly to Valentina, and then maybe that potential gets shortened a little bit. So that's my concern about Zhang, but I feel like she deserved to be in the top 10 just to have, I guess, a female presence, and the Chinese market is so much upside there.
for if I may, that's my number nine.
Okay.
My number nine is Jean Wiley. I don't mean to jump ahead, but
no, I love it.
It's the perfect opportunity to jump in there. And for the reasons you mentioned, you know, 35 years of age at this weight class would normally be a big deal breaker. But we just saw her against Tatiana Suarez, or, you know, whatever version we got of her. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Zhang Weili looked awesome. She looked, I mean, completely in command of a vast array of techniques. Her athleticism hasn't dropped off at all. It seems to be, in fact, that everything part of her game is working smoothly. Now, of course, as we know, she could fall. I mean, you know this as well as I do. You get old in the fight game seemingly overnight at times, and that absolutely is a risk here. But because she is 35 and is just manhandling contenders, or at a bare minimum, you know, putting, it looks like there's big distance between her and her peers. Even if there is some drop off, I still think she might be able to win for a little while. Again, we don't really know that, but add that to that, the Chinese market, how important that is. If you were trying to build out, you would want someone with the biggest reach as possible. In theory, she's got a big one. She's so talented. You got to put her in the top 10. I put her number nine.
Yeah, definitely a great choice. And yeah, I mean, she claims she's 34, so her passport is wrong. So maybe we get an extra year on that edge. But yeah, definitely a great choice there with Zhang. Okay, my number nine, since you listed that, I went with Charles Oliveira. Who I think obviously 35, but got such a big following. Who knows how much time he has left, but I think you could put him, I mean, who's buying more pay-per-views headlined by Charles Oliveira or Zhang Weili, despite one being champion or not? I think the right fight, Charles Oliveira, still that guy. The big fan base, I don't know, he seemed like one to me, given he's already kind of proven, I don't know how many fights he has left, but he was someone I feel like I had to have in there, given all his UFC accolades and given the crazy fan base he's followed for himself, the Brazil market, he's huge down there. He was one I thought was a good fit.
So I did not put him on anywhere on my list, not because we don't love Charles Oliveira. I mean, I think everybody does, but I would make him a feature of the right now.
Yeah.
Right. Maximize it right now versus planning for the future at I think he's 35 as well at 135. Yep, I'm sorry, 155. What am I saying? You know, again, hard to know exactly what that will mean, because some of these guys at 155 have aged past 35 in ways that I think some of us, certainly me, I did not necessarily expect. So you have to have some managed expectations about that. But just the orientation of my list, I think, is going to look a little bit different, because it's not that he is not everything you said, but the way in which you view the task, I think, will change how he gets listed or not.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I think I had him at 10 originally, and then I ended up switching him one above Zhang. But yeah, he was one I felt like needed to be in there. But we'll go back to you with your number eight. Where'd you go for that?
So again, I went big on youth. Mm-hmm. I went probably much more than sounds like what you did. I mean, there's probably going to be some overlap, obviously. But I went heavy on youth, and I want to find people who are again, I was trying to think, who can you plan around, right? Mm-hmm. Who's going to be here a while? Who do you think has real upside? Who has shown you that, like, the bright lights are not too big? And this guy hasn't had a perfect run by any stretch of the imagination, and I've been slow to believe in him. And even now, I don't know exactly how far he can go, but because he is so young and he's already doing so well, I had to put him on the list. Give me Ian Garry, sitting at number eight for me. Ian Garry is a guy who, you know, can I guarantee to you that he's going to wear UFC gold? I cannot do that. It's just too hard to tell. But I have a feeling that at a bare minimum, he's going to be fighting for it, and he's going to be in big fights for a while. He's got a big mouth. He has a polarizing relationship with the fan base, although that seems to be changing to a degree as well. And he's, what, 26, 27, something like that?
27.
Like, 27. This guy's got he's not even in his physical prime yet. I think it'd be foolish to, if you're trying to look to the future, again, depending on how you want to view things. But for me, if I'm really thinking about the next, you know, you often hear, like, when someone gets out of college, what's your five-year plan? So that by the time you're 27, you're in your late 20s now, where are you going to be? Where are you going to be at 32? Where are you going to be, you know, subsequently, all these sort of, like, these intervals of time? In a five-year plan, Ian Garry should have been in some really big fights, and he maybe will have done some really big things. We don't know, but I just feel like that's a pretty safe bet. So I'm going to bet him at eight.
I like that one. I had him on another tier I can read out after the fact, called, like, extras with upside, who I didn't fit in my top 30 there. But yeah, I think definitely something I was pondering as well. I guess I went slightly more with, like, you know, maybe you thought of the 5-year plan. Maybe I was thinking a 2-3-year plan, but kind of in the same vein. But yeah, I thought
even with that, he might be in some big fights, you know.
I totally agree. I mean, I thought he showed a lot of himself in that fight against Shavkat, and only going to be bigger things from him. He's a guy who you could headline in Europe, and of course, if you could get something to Ireland, that would be huge around him. So yeah, there's a lot of, I guess, possibilities there, especially with the overseas market. So yeah, I like that for sure. I think Ian Garry is extremely talented, and he obviously has the gift of gab too, and he knows how to sell and promote these fights. And I'm glad the kind of stage of people hating on him and his family is seemingly a little bit over. I think he turned a lot of heads with that fight against Shavkat, so that was great. Who do you think will end up having him fight next, I wonder?
Man, I was thinking about this too. You could do Joaquin Buckley. You could do Sean Brady. There's a few. You could do the loser of the UFC London main event, potentially. Again, it would depend on timing and how you want that to go. But if Garry is taking the time after the Rakhmonov fight to really work on other pieces of his game, because it was defensively pretty sound, it was offensively a little bit unrefined. If he's working on some of the more offensive elements of his game, dude, he's this close to really turning some big corners. Whether he will or not, I don't know. But either of those names work well for me.
Yeah, there's some good fights for him on the table. We'll see what they go with. Okay, my number 8, this is tied for the youngest person on my list at 30 years old, already rose to the championship level, could not stay there. But at number 8, I had Sean O'Malley, who is, you know, 30, obviously. You know, the style matchup in terms of him getting back to a title with Merab there is really tough, but you can use him in different ways. He is young. As long as he has the passion to do this for another 5 years, I think there's a lot you can do with him. How much did the injury he claims he had affect the performance against Merab? But I think even without that, he can still beat a lot of big top bantamweights. Has a big enough frame that you could maybe use him at 45 one day. Like, who knows? There's a lot of stuff I think you could still do with Sean O'Malley. And given his age, I feel like you had to put him on there.
So he definitely makes my secondary list. Okay. Here's the thing. Here, and this is why I was up against it. Mm-hmm. See, this is a tough one because he was already the champion. You're like, well, how could you have him and then not Umar? And it's like, well, first of all, how old is O'Malley? 30?
30.
So he's slightly older than Umar. I mean, I guess that part is kind of negligible. But the issue for me is Merab is a tough matchup for literally anybody, it turns out. And he was a really tough matchup for Sean. And I don't think that it's crazy to think that he could do better in a rematch and even potentially win. I don't think that's crazy. But I think that's tough. And then I think Umar is also going to be a bad matchup for him. So when I think about Sean O'Malley's future, it's not to say I've written off 135 completely. I actually just wonder if he gets older, what might happen at 45. Because I think he will fill out. And I think he might actually fill into that weight class a little bit better. But that is also quite speculative on my part too. I don't know what he wants. I don't know what his like competitive ambitions are. I mean, obviously getting a title in another weight class would probably be on the list, but on what time frame does he actually pull the trigger on it? It's really kind of hard to know. So I definitely have him listed as somebody of importance.
Yeah.
I just couldn't quite fit him into the way I was looking at it inside my top 10.
Yeah, I think for him, like, again, as we kind of said off the top, one fight can change everything. If he goes out there and knocks out Merab in the first round in a rematch or anywhere, right, then this whole thing changes. You're like, this guy's one of the biggest stars in the UFC, all that kind of stuff. He gets everything back that I think he had going for him going into that Sphere show. So, yeah, this one he could either drop down or move up quite a few spots, performance dependent on the next one, I think.
I don't think there's any question. Again, or let's say somehow Umar ends up with the title, then Sean fights him later and starches him. I mean, you're back in business in the biggest of ways. You know what I mean? So, like, that's why to me he's on the bubble, right? He's on the bubble. Like, he can do those things. I don't know if I'm going to peg him for that right now, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of concerning for him, right? Because if he goes in there and if he loses again to Merab, like the same way, 50-45 decision where he can't really get up off the ground, then I don't know what you do with him. He's in that tough spot, which I know you're kind of a proponent for getting a fight in between these immediate rematches, just because you lose back-to-back to the champ, you're in a real, real tricky position.
Super. I don't like... In rare cases, it is important to beat the guy who is the guy twice, but in many cases, it ends up just being quite destructive. So for that reason, I like a little bit more varied matchmaking for some of these circumstances.
Yeah. Do you think that's what they end up doing though next, Merab and Sean too?
I mean, I spoke to Tim Welch and he seemed to indicate that that was what they were looking at. Yeah, they probably do. And if you're Sean, like the other part too, where the UFC comes calling for a title shot, you're like, oh no, I'll just get one in a year from now. It's like, well, you know, who the hell knows what's going to be there a year from now. You just kind of have to take it when you take it. So, I think they probably, yeah, if forced to bet, I would bet that they'd go that direction. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like there's an easier fight out there. Like, oh, you're not going to take the title shot against Merab and fight who? Umar, fight who? Piotr Jan. Like, these aren't significantly easier fights.
I'm so glad you brought that up because everyone's like, oh, Jan deserves it. And fair enough. Like, that Figgy fight was, you know, among other ones, great. Mm-hmm. Really great. But Merab had 50 takedown attempts against him. 50, 5-0. I think it was 49 to be specific. Yeah. Something like that. But basically 50. It's like, dude, you got like drowned in a sea of offense. And that is not a reason to necessarily not make the fight. But I get why they wouldn't go that direction unless they were really kind of forced to, right?
Yeah, agreed. Okay, did you do your 8 yet or no?
I did 8. 8 was Ian Gary for me.
Okay.
So I'm at 7.
All right, let's hit your 7.
So this is probably, I'm looking at my list here. This might be the oldest guy on my list. So this is going to be something that, you know, you won't see a whole lot of as I go through here. Though, well, there's one more guy the same age. Okay. So this guy's tied for the oldest guy on my list.
Okay.
And this dude might end up being run over in his next fight. But even if he is, I just feel like there's a lot of versatility with what you could do with him in multiple weight classes. And I think he'd make it interesting no matter what. Which is, give me DDP, Dricus du Plessis. Now, again, Khamzat might run over him, but we just went to a territory with DDP where, first of all, international fighter. I do think that, I don't know if the South African market, Mike, and I'm sure you know this too, it's an interestingly quiet one that's always been relevant but never fully catered to. And what I mean by that is, even when we were watching the Bodog fights of the, you know, past MMA promotion gauntlet, and there was Trevor Prangley in those fights, you know, one of the original South Africans, and they've always had EFC and some other promotions. They've never really gone to South Africa to like really help make it an established presence. But nevertheless, I do think it is good that you can take a guy like Dricus who can help build overseas markets and then be useful in Australia, useful in Canada, useful in the United States, obviously with his English proficiency. So he's got some value there. But the real issue for me is, even if he loses to Khamzat, which is very real, he could do that. Dude, 205 to me is completely wide open. He is a huge middleweight. And, you know, it's not like he's got the cleanest technique, but I'll be damned if he doesn't have some of the most effective technique. And more to that point, he just tied Rich Franklin for the number of title defenses among UFC champions. Obviously, Anderson has the most, Izzy at 2, then Chris Weidman, and then Rich Franklin. Well, now Rich Franklin has company with DDP. You know, you're talking about one of the best middleweights to ever do it. He's just 33 years of age. I do think he could go to 205. And, you know, some of those guys are going to be bigger, but I think he can handle himself up there pretty well. Who knows how much longer Poatan has at the top? Like, to me, DDP is a real threat up at 205, to say nothing of the fact that he could certainly hold on to his 185 title. This is my point. He still has a little bit of time left in either the end of his prime or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. It's going to age much more gracefully up a weight class, which I think he'll just end up being in anyway. That one is as wide open as it's frankly ever been. I don't know, man. I'm willing to put this guy on the list because not only is he a UFC champion, but there's a reason to believe he's going to be relevant for quite some time. I like where he's at.
Yeah, perfect synergy here, Luke. At my number 7, I had Dricus du Plessis. So
I
thought he was a great choice there. I mean, he, as you said, 31 years old, so does have the youth on side. He seems very like locked in on this game, right? Like, he doesn't seem like someone who wants to go take a year off between fights or doing whatever. I think his only like blemish was not taking the title shot when they first wanted him to, the fight that Sean Strickland ended up beating Izzy. But I think that worked out very well for him in the long term because he beat both of those guys. And yeah, he just seems to know the game very well. It seems like his head is fully in it. So I expect that we will have him around for like another 4 or 5 years pretty consistently fighting often. And especially if he can hold that belt, it's going to be a big problem. And, you know, look at all the guys he's beaten already at middleweight. Like, he's here, he's established. Even if he loses that belt, probably be like one win away from a rematch or whatever the case may be. So he's done his work. He's established himself. And I think he's got all the ticks, all the boxes you would want for someone like that in your top 10.
There we go. Yeah. Great minds think alike.
There you go. That? Well, I'll go into six here because I think it's on the other side of the coin there for my number six. And you might think this is a little too low, but is his expected next opponent at middleweight. I put Khamzat Chimaev at number six. And again, you might think that's too low. I debated putting him higher. He is only 30 years old, so the second tied for the second youngest person on my list. But the only thing that concerns me is just all the question marks, right? Like the inactivity, the health, the things like that. If those were not as uncertain as they were, you could probably put him at one if you wanted to, or like somewhere in the top three. But I just haven't seen it yet. Like this could change, as we said off the top, rapidly if he shuts down some of those questions or concerns. But yeah, that's what kept him right outside the top five for me. But if you're talking skill, fighting wise, potential, everything, like he could be number one. I just didn't have the heart to put him there.
Were you in attendance when he beat Whitaker?
Yes, I was in Abu Dhabi for that.
Yeah, I was in Abu Dhabi. I mean, how did he seem to you?
Like, what, reception-wise or just, like, physically or...
Both.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked great all week. It seems like the weight cut wasn't as bad as, you know, we've seen historically. 185, I think, was definitely the right move for him. Leaving 170, I thought that was killing him. It seems like he's changed his training habits and his methods. So, yeah, he seemed great there. And then reception-wise, like, yeah, they love him at the open workouts, which we rarely get in the United States anymore. They do them all the time in Australia and Abu Dhabi and stuff now, and they loved him there. So yeah, it seemed like, you know, there's freaking multiple like Bentleys and stuff parked outside the hotel that have like Chimaev signs and stuff on them. So yeah, it seems like he's very beloved over there. But like, that's a problem, you know. If you can only have him fight twice a year, like once in Abu Dhabi, once in Saudi Arabia or something like that, what does that do for you? How much benefit can you really get? How can you maximize him? So there's that question as well of where can you actually fight? How can you utilize him as a resource?
I think that's fair. He's on my list. I don't want to spoil where I've got him, but I certainly acknowledge the doubts are well founded. I'll put it that way.
But yeah, his connection with the fans and his fighting style, like what, nothing to point at negatively there. It's just all the outside the cage stuff that leads to questions. What's your early lean in him and Dricus?
Him. Yeah. You know, again, you know, the thing is I've counted out Dricus so many times. I mean, maybe not the last couple of times or whatever, but for a long time I was like, how could this goofball be, you know, champion? And he just keeps winning. And so I think it also would be foolish to think he couldn't do it. But at the same time, I don't know. Khamzat's got so many advantages and so many key areas. I mean, his ability, the speed on the level change, his ability to take the back and hold it. He's got ground and pound. He's got subs. Like, you know, it's going to take everything Dricus has to win. I think he can. I wouldn't, if he got his hand raised, I would not be shocked by any stretch of the imagination. But forced to make a call, I would choose Khamzat. Yeah,
it's a tricky one. I told myself I would never pick against Dricus again until I saw him lose, but now we arrive at this one and
right
picking against him.
I know,
it's tough. Okay, who do you have at six?
At six, man, I wasn't even sure if I was going to put him on the list, not because I don't have great faith in him, but because his options, you know, now saying this, I'm sure I'm telegraphing what direction I'm going to go. His options are bad, really bad. And that to me is honestly, that might be the only limiting factor that this guy has, because everything else seems to be A++. It's Tom Aspinall. I mean, let's just talk about the good before we talk about the bad. Young, athletic, natural learner, well-rounded for the most part, can beat you on the feet, can beat you on the ground, well-liked by the fans, represents an important overseas market. He can headline shows for you there, and then as well as continental Europe. I mean, he can headline shows basically anywhere, but certainly if you need him in those particular places, he'd be a huge win. You know, there's just so many parts about what he offers that you have. I mean, how many times you get a young... He's this generation's Cain Velasquez to a degree. And what I mean by that is, I mean, there's very, very different things. But when Cain Velasquez was coming up, like the reason why the UFC was so excited about him was that they really wanted to grow in Mexico. And how many times do you have, and I know the whole sea level Cain joke, right? But when he competed in the United States, let's just say at, you know, not at altitude or whatever, he had amazing cardio. That was the part that was so interesting. You had a big guy of Hispanic origin who could wrestle and had ridiculous cardio for a heavyweight. That was kind of what you had. And like, that was such a pulverizing force. You know, you go back and look at the Silva fights and the JDS wars and everything. It was just pulverizing everybody. Now, I would say that Aspinall has a little bit more razzle dazzle in his game. Obviously, doesn't have the same kind of in your face wrestle boxer type thing. He's got a little more finesse and range. He's the result of a more modern age of fighting, and that's what you get. But it's kind of similar. Young guy, overseas market. You just, how many times you have a British heavyweight who can finish, you know, Russian heavyweights with a Kimura from top half guard? Like, you know, it's just our straight arm bar, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just insane that he's got some of these kinds of skills. And so for that reason, I'm really high on him. And the reason why I kept him in the top 10, aside from all the things that I've mentioned, is my hope, and maybe to an extent my belief, is that over time they're going to find some decent challenges for him. Maybe it's John Jones. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Poatan. Maybe, I doubt it's Francis. One never knows. Crazier things have happened. Or somebody else that they find a way to either recruit over or whatever. They'll find a way to get a challenge for him. But as it stands, if the Jones fight doesn't materialize, the Poatan fight is big, but I think that's a fairly one-sided event in favor of the natural athletic heavyweight in Tom Aspinall. And so I don't know what they're going to be able to do for him, and that is a huge question mark. But when it comes to what he offers, Mike, I mean, Tom Aspinall's got almost everything you could want out of a heavyweight and then some. I had to put him on the list somewhere.
Absolutely. I had him higher on mine, and I'll get to that, but everything you said is on point there. He needs like a rival, right? He needs someone who maybe lasts longer than a minute and a half. Fighting him would be a good start. Like that's kind of a problem. I mean, it's great. There's the Mike Tyson element, right? Like he just goes in there and crushes everyone in a minute. You can't sell that. But at some point, you know, like we were seeing, as you mentioned, Cain Velasquez do that. And then what happened? JDS knocked him out in a minute and we got a trilogy out of it. Like we need something like that would probably benefit his career. Not necessarily getting knocked out in a minute, but like someone who can give
him a rival.
Yeah. Like I don't know if Surreal Gon's that guy. He's like the only one he hasn't really fought out there and hasn't run through. So yeah, if we don't get the Jones fight or the Aspinall or the Pereira fight, could be big time trouble for this guy. But I think you can at least for a little bit use him to go out there and just crush the competition and build him up that way. And at 31 years old, amazing upside for a heavyweight. He could do this for another 10 years if he's going and like fighting damage free like this. So that's part of the reasons why I had him higher. I'll reveal exactly on my list there, but yeah, I think Tom, amazing choice there at number 6. Okay, my number 5, curious to see your reaction to this opening. I put Max Holloway. And he was the other American we mentioned there, along with Sean O'Malley. I think still only 33. I think he has elevated himself to the point of, doesn't matter if you're really fighting for belts, like you could put him on the top of a pay-per-view. You could do a BMF belt. Like I think the knockout of Justin Gaethje at UFC 300 sent him to a territory where he doesn't ever have to turn back from that. He can sell fights on his own. He is a legend now, a draw. And I would definitely still, even at his age, even with all the fights and all the wars and all the damage, most significant strikes taken and dished out in UFC history for Max Holloway, I think he's still a huge asset that even if you only got 3 years out of him, I think they would be 3 very beneficial years.
So he's on my secondary list. Yep. And the only reason I couldn't put him on there is I just don't know what's going to happen after that Topuria loss. You know, no one's polished him off like that. And once you get that, again, if anybody is capable of bounce back, it's him. And I certainly hope that, because he still has the BMF title holder. That reason alone makes him extremely valuable. And I'm not betting that he will look terrible. That's really not my point. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned. I'd be lying if I said that, you know, where one guy suffers a really bad KO loss and then they just kind of stumble from there. Yeah. But I certainly recognize that if that's not the case and he can recover from it like he has from other, you know, like let's say the second Poirier fight or something like that, then the sky is the limit. He'll have many, many valuable years left in front of him.
If Ilya Topuria said today he was vacating the featherweight title and moving up, you were Max's manager, would you say, hey, maybe you should stick at 45? Instead of going to 55.
The hard part there is, and I'm sure you know this as well, I haven't talked to Max's current manager, but I talked to Max's old manager pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. And even like even he was saying back then that this is Max's old manager, I think, repped him up through the third Volk fight. After that, I think they split. And he was even saying then that their weight cuts were really hard. You know, Max can do it because he's Max, but that's the only part. Like, if the question was a fourth Volk fight at 145, how would you rate Max's chances? I actually rate him pretty good. Mm-hmm. But staying there as he gets to 35, you know, that's the hard one for me.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, who opened your top five?
All right. So at number five, I'm going to go with a guy who I'm still not fully sold on. But again, I went big on youth. And I'm like, okay, who is young, already doing great things that you could imagine is going to be here just a while? Mm-hmm. I went Armin Saryukin. Okay. Armin Saryukin, to me, you know, obviously falling apart at the finish line with an injury against Islam. Not great.
Yeah.
Not great. Doesn't do wonderful things for your stock. I acknowledge. But I believe he's still 27 years of age. Yeah. Dude, here was my view on that fight. My view was Saryukin was the number one rightful contender to challenge Islam. Mm-hmm. But I did not like his chances because while I thought his game had gotten better, I did not think it had gotten... He did not really round enough corners up to that point to really make me think he was a threat. And, you know, I wouldn't have to go into like a breakdown on it, but a lot of his ground and pound comes from guys being flat on their back after a established takedown. I'm like, that's just not Islam, and I don't know how that's really going to go. And it fell apart. I actually believe this, and I know there's about people who probably will not agree at all, and that's fine. I actually think that that probably did him a favor because I think he was going to lose that night, and now you've lost twice to the guy. Where are you supposed to go from here? We just talked about like what happens when you lose twice. And again, the first one was, you know, years and years, 6 years ago, whatever it was. But I think it did him a favor. And I actually think this time is really going to let him begin to round some of those corners from a technical standpoint that he needs to get to the best place that he can be. And given that he is not even really in his physical prime yet, there's actually a lot of upside here. I do recognize that in 6 years, he's still kind of the same fighter. Mm-hmm. You know, if wrestle you first. Okay, he banged out Benil Dariush in like a minute. But like, what happens if that doesn't happen? You have to go full 15 or even 25. Can he win on his feet? I don't really know. Islam, you know, can do that. Like Islam, you know, can win anywhere the fight goes. It really does not matter. So as I mentioned, there's some developmental issues still in play. But because he's this far ahead, he's obviously, you know, just fucking yoked out of his mind. And so young, I think it's important to take his chances very seriously in becoming a champion. I don't know how soon, but soon enough anyway.
Yeah, interesting. That's probably the biggest discrepancy we'll have on our list is you putting him there. I think your reasoning is sound. I guess the only stuff that would concern me is just like, where is his head at and his long-term passion for the sport? Like, we know he comes from family money. He said, I do this for fun, like not for the money. So like, you know, you could bring up the question if he had come from a different background or things like that, would he go through with that fight? Like if he desperately needed it and, you know, felt like it was back against the wall, only chance, did he feel like he did have the room? If this isn't the perfect scenario for me, it's not going to ruin my life. Like I'm still going to have money and a nice house and nice cars to go to. You don't know. So I guess skill wise, upside, age, everything is all there. I just do wonder about the long-term focus. Like I guess all the stuff I was saying about Drickus positively when it comes to that, I do have questions around Armin, but yeah, extremely talented. But if he loses to Islam again, if that's the next fight or the next fight after the next fight, he's in a tricky spot. But if Islam leaves to welterweight before then, I think that division is very much his for the taking potentially for a while. So I do like that choice and the reasoning, but not on my list. So,
okay.
How about you go back to back here? Who's your number four?
Number four. So this one I'm still pretty high on. Now, again, after the last run, I don't know exactly if I have as much reason for confidence as I once did, but I'm going to ride with the guy. I still think there's so much opportunity for upside, including potentially imminently. Give me Shavkat Rakhmonov. Shavkat Rakhmonov. I know he kind of didn't look boogeyman-ish against Ian Garry. Again, credit to Ian Garry. I already had him on the list. But Rakhmonov, just 30 years of age still, He has big opportunities left in front of him. I think Bilal Muhammad, you know, I didn't think Bilal had much of a chance before the Ngarry fight, the Ngarry with Shafkat. Mm-hmm. And now I realize that, you know, maybe Bilal should even be the favorite. I don't want to disrespect the champion at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm even willing to concede that maybe that's the way it should be. But Rakhmonov, to me, man, he's got some real issues, but he's been competing, as I understand it, very injured, very fucked up. This is not exactly who he really is. Mm. And, you know, has he beaten someone the caliber of Muhammad yet? No, he hasn't. But I think he's got all the skills to do it, and I absolutely think he's got the long-term potential to be at the top of this division, or at a bare minimum, you know, we're asking valuable for the UFC, mm-hmm. very valuable in that regard. As just, you know, and also, like, Gary's the only guy he didn't finish. Like, this is just a guy who goes for it typically in those ways. The other thing I would say that people sleep on is I get asked all the time, hey, what's the next big country that's going to turn the corner and really be a global contributor? And it's obviously very difficult to say because, you know, China seems poised to be able to do something like that. But, you know, that might, what's the time horizon for that? I don't know. It could be quite some time before that ever really materializes. I don't know how big Kazakhstan's going to be, but they're already gotten a lot bigger. Obviously, on the boxing side, they've had celebrated figures for many, many years, including but not limited to Triple G. But more than that, I'm told that, like, outside of Triple G, Shafkat is the most popular Kazakh fighter in the country. There is a vast array of gyms already, and there's obviously from the Soviet influence, there's a lot of combat sambo there as well. You're getting a lot of guys that are, like, ready made at a pretty good level who are coming out of there. You're also beginning to see, like, high level regional outfits put on consistently good shows, finding consistently good products. Did you watch some of those shows? These guys are good. This guy is not just valuable, Mike, because of what he can do in all the ways that I mentioned, but as, you know, if we're going to put Zhang Weili about what she could mean for the opening of the Chinese market, that's not just for consumers. That's for talent development and recruitment and everything else that goes with it. Shafkat might be able to do that as well. So there's a lot of reasons why I put him on this list, all of them, including but not limited to what he means for a developing Kazakh market, is a big one.
Yeah, I mean, all well said. I think that's a great choice. My only reluctance is, you know, what is the fan attachment to him? Like, from what I recall, the ticket sales when him and Bilal were supposed to headline UFC 10 were not moving great. Yeah. So, you know, he does something for himself wearing the hat, and, like, I think he tries to connect with the fans and inviting Bilal into the cage, as awkward as that was. Like, he's at least trying a little bit, but definitely I think a little more refinement needed. But if he, as you said, is operating at suboptimal health and performance in some of these fights and still winning the way he is, never been beaten, I think that's a pretty promising thing. And at 30 years old, some upside for sure. He could lose to Bilal and then still be the champion three fights from now. So a lot of potential there. As I said, I had him, you know, lower in that group of potential future champions, but I do not blame you at all for having him where you did. Okay, to flip it to the top three now, opening my top, or no, I have four. I haven't said four. My number four, I put Alex Pereira, who was a concerning one, maybe given the age of 37, but who knows with this guy. Like, he could retire after the next fight. He could fight three times a year for the next 3 years, like, depending on how you want to use him. I think he would stick around and be an asset for as long as he made it worth his while and as long as he's not getting brutally knocked out every fight or something like that. But it was hard given how powerful he was for the UFC, how many times he saved their asses in 2024, and just his willingness to fight everyone in unideal spots, unideal training camps. How could you not want a guy in your group who you can pick up the phone in any situation and he will answer and say yes? So had to put Alex Pereira there, even though the age and, you know, his toughest fight coming right around the corner that he could lose and change everything is sitting right there. But I just look at what this man's done and it's hard for me to not have him there.
Because of the time horizon mm-hmm. that I have picked, he doesn't yeah. make sense as a choice. Again, it seems like we have slightly different time totally horizons. Fair, though. But I mean, how can you deny, dude, like, he was, again, we don't have to get into the debate over fighter of the year, and it depends how you define it. Do you define it as just what they did in the cage or beyond it? But obviously, if you define it beyond just what they did in the cage, although itself quite exemplary, when you expand the definition, there is only one answer. It can only be Poatan, who saved the UFC multiple times. And of course, you know, did it to his own benefit. I mean, let's not lose sight of that too, but you know, he's been Mr. Reliable, Mr. You Could Count On. He's been honestly like the star that the fans have connected to the most. But at 37, I just don't know what is left. That's not to say I think retirement is imminent or something like that. But as you mentioned, he's got the Ankalaev fight coming up. God only knows what's going to happen there. And then the biggest ones left would be Jones or Aspinall, but those are all fights where he's going to be the decisive betting underdog. You know, it's not like he hasn't proven his worth. The guy has been one of, I mean, literally one of the most efficiently useful, big, successful signings the UFC's ever had. I mean, maybe Brock was more efficient in the sense that, like,
this much out of him, though.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. It was like pulling teeth with all the injuries and everything else. It was really, really tough to do. Whereas Poatan's like, ring me, brother. We're ready to rock, you know? So it's like, you know, he's not obviously Brock Lesnar, like, popular, but okay. He is, I mean, a Swiss Army knife if ever there was one. But for my time horizon framing, I just couldn't put him on the list. However, I did put him in my honorable mentions, which I want to read when we're all done.
Yeah, for sure. No, those are all sound. I think my window is just a little shorter, and who knows with this guy, like, especially if he goes to heavyweight, you can have him thump guys there until he's 42 years old, even in non-title fights. So I kind of like that. We'll see. Okay. To open your top three, Luke, we're getting into serious business here.
Yeah.
Who's your number three slot?
So I think this guy is – actually, you know what? I'm wrong. I think this guy is the oldest one I had because I thought DDP was a little bit older. So this one's going to be oldest. But I still think he's not going to be around forever. Like, if he's still around fighting in 5 years, I'd be surprised. However, within the – whatever he's got left, two, that's probably closer to three, I think, he's going to be one of the most valuable guys on the roster. It's Islam Makhachev. I don't – I mean, this is a no-brainer for me. The – lightweight champ, the pound-for-pound number one guy in the sport. He can headline in LA. He can headline in Abu Dhabi. He can headline in Australia, which he's done obviously all three, and has won every single fucking time. He speaks English. I think his personality is really beginning to show. And now he's looking to potentially climb weight classes, which could be its own little fun endeavor. I still think when you look at the lightweight roster, even though there are some other great names, to me, he's the runaway best guy, not just because he's the champion, but like independent of all of that. If I'm trying to figure out who's actually best, you've got to put him either at or pretty much, you know, incontestably at the top of that list. He's just going to be in big, relevant fights for quite some time going forward. Even if he has a drop off, if you're the number one pound for pound guy in the sport, even the drop off takes time, right? You would just be a fool to not plan around this guy. I mean, again, you would the only knock would be, well, you might only have 2 years left, and then he's just going to hang it up. Okay, fine. But even in that 2 years left, that's four more fights. Those are going to be four arguably historically relevant fights. This guy, you have to plan around, not forever, but certainly for a little while, and he's got to be near the top of all of your plans.
Yep, totally agreed. I had him in my top three as well. I will reveal the exact order. It was higher than this, but my God, like, he is at his peak right now. 15 straight wins in the UFC. This could soon be the guy you're saying has the longest winning streak in UFC history. If he passes Anderson Silva, he's number one pound for pound. Yeah, I agree with what you said, though, on the longevity. Like, he's 33. I would be surprised if we got four more years out of him, but these three next year's could be career defining, legacy defining, and yeah, like he's something special, man. So no doubt Islam is going to be up there for us both. It was just a matter of where. At number three, I had the previously mentioned Tom Aspinall. I thought, you know, obviously, we kind of set it all on him that he is a huge asset, both physically and literally. So I love Tom, and I think he's got a bright future at 31. Okay, so you're number two then. Curious to see what these top two look like now.
So it's going to get pretty easy to figure out once I tell you what number two is for my number one. But for number two, I went Khamzat Chimaev.
Okay.
And the reason why I went Khamzat is I have been, I mean, everybody has been like, well, what are you going to get with this guy? But I have a modest amount of real enthusiasm for, or at a bare minimum optimism that he'll maximize what he's got. And the reason why I say that is because I don't know what the illness he had was or how bad it messed him up. But I think that changing weight classes and getting that weight cut dialed in was a big part of it. And it didn't happen automatically, but I think it's happened better now. Mm-hmm. I think another key part of it is going to be, well, he couldn't, you know, he could only fight in, you know, whatever, Abu Dhabi or Saudi Arabia. but I think that's changing. He was able to get us to Australia, and I'm going to assume that Dana White is correct, that Khamzat's going to be able to compete in the United States, which to me vastly opens up his opportunities. He's still on, I think, the right side of 30, if I'm not mistaken, right? How old is he?
He's 30 on the nose.
30, okay, on the nose. So you still got plenty of time, and he's just got an absolutely electric style. Like, even if he doesn't do well against DDP, which I'd be very surprised, he's just going to find a way to be relevant. He's going to beat too many other guys to not be relevant. I mean, dude, he just ran through Robert Whittaker. What are we talking about here, you know? So to me, you are, if you're putting him at number two like I am, you're making a bet that the things that have derailed him have been kind of ironed out. And that is a bet. It's just uncertain. But I feel reasonably confident now you can do it. And for that reason, I have him at number two.
Yeah, definitely. We spoke on him a little earlier. I had him at six, I think, two. That would have been like my high point, right? I said I would have put him at two or one if I felt more comfortable about those things. Obviously, you do. I think it's a bet worth making, that's for sure, if you can get this guy to do everything right. But yeah, just so many question marks. We'll see, I think, when this fight and where this fight with Dricus du Plessis gets scheduled might give us some insight. And if it doesn't and Dricus fights someone else, then I think we have reason to be very concerned about what's going on with him. So we'll see. Okay, I think this kind of reveals some of it. At my number one, since I assume I know what your number one is going to be, I had Islam at number one. So that put at my number two, Ilia Topuria, who I assume you had at number one.
Correct. I'm a number one.
Yeah. I mean, we spoke on Islam. Amazing. Ilia, this was the hardest point. I mean, obviously he's got 5 years at 28 years old. Currently champion, has undefeated record, has the Spanish market. You can take it from there. Why did you, I guess, put him at one above these guys? My trepidation was just Islam. I think he's number one pound for pound. So amazing. And it was really a coin toss between these two, but why did you put Ilia one?
I mean, 28 years old. Yeah. Polished off Volk and Max in back-to-back fights. And again, you know, everyone knows the asterisks for Volk or whatever, but it didn't matter. I think, you know, even if they rematch, I'm picking Topuria, and I feel reasonably confident in that. I think he can beat anybody at 55. I'm not saying he will, but I think he obviously has the real ability to threaten. And at 28 years old, and you can open up a new market in Spain, which they might have to do apparently a stadium show for, and you're at worst trilingual, you can obviously, you know, represent the Georgian market. His Spanish is fluent and his English is pretty goddamn good too. And the fans didn't really get to know him all that well, but I think as they slowly begin to realize how good he is and they see his personality, there is more and more acceptance of him. Obviously Europe, but in Spain in particular, he's red hot. He's one of like the most important athletes that they have in the country right now. Currently, that's not even an exaggeration. I'm not putting him number one, obviously, but he's among the sort of relevant non-football fighters, football athletes that they have. He's just electric in every way. He's so well-rounded. He's so established already and only 28 years old. I mean, my God, the only thing limiting him would be either weight class, right? Where, you know, 55 might just be too big in certain ways, but even that is not necessarily true. Or that he doesn't want to do this necessarily for all that long. That kind of seems to be the big one.
Yeah.
But as long as he wants to do this, it is very hard for me to look at what he can do and think it's going to be some mediocre dreck. It's just not. Like, whatever he does is going to be probably really awesome, even when he's fighting, again, ostensibly at 55 and he's got a bigger opponent or something. He's got the whole thing. He's got the total package. And at 28, I mean, the world is his oyster. He's my number one.
Yeah, great choice. It's tough with him on my end. I think maybe the reason I put Islam over him is I do think, you know, the Russian market for Islam, obviously he's got that whole support. I think his social media imprint is huge. He's obviously had more of a runway to build that up than Ilia has at this point. But I think the point you said there at the end, like, what's his long-term game? I don't think he's going down the McGregor path of all the negative bad stuff, but like, he's clearly only wanting the big things. He's willing to give up the title and change divisions after one defense. Like, I think he's always going to keep trying to push for the bigger. And whenever that hits a roadblock, I think he'll either get bored or have enough money or other things to do that. Maybe I'd be surprised if we saw Ilia Topuria fighting in the UFC at 35 years old. So
I agree with that. 35. Yeah. I mean, 7 years from now. Yeah. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, so those, I guess that's my little bit of trepidation why I had him at 2 over 1, but still pretty close overall, Luke. I think either of these lists you're taking, I think we're in a pretty strong position here. But I know before I let you go and we wrap things up, anything else you want to say on Ilya or Islam before we move on?
No, but I wanted to talk about my honorable mentions.
Yeah,
list.
Yeah, just quickly on them. If you had the book, do you put Ilya versus Islam, or do you think, given we have them at our 1 and 2, is that either a good move because we have them 1 and 2, that would be a massive fight for the sport, or do you keep those two in their lane and you try to use 1 and 2 as your, you know, two independent objects that could be built around?
I would keep them separate, but I just don't know if there is market demand for that, you know. Yeah. I think there's demand to get them together and, you know, follow the money. Yep. That seems to dictate everything.
Yep. Okay, give me your honorable mention list.
Okay, so these are in no particular order. Mm-hmm. These are not ranked. You ranked your outside the top 10. I did not. I'm just listing names, okay? Poetan, mm-hmm. obviously. Max Holloway, obviously. Anthony Hernandez, to me, seems like a fighter to keep an eye on. I don't know how far he's going to go, but again, if I was thinking young and I want to really add a quality member to my roster or something, it would be him. The next guy lost, but is so young, and I feel like has so much potential. Tetsuro Taira. Mm. I really like his game, although I've, you know, he ran into a roadblock. Michael Morales out of Ecuador at 170 is proving each fight he is a force to be reckoned with. Again, jury's still out on this one, but it'd be hard to throw Bo Nickel in the trash, right? Where is he going to be going forward? Kyle Bahalio, I think, also a young guy who's doing great stuff. He's on the upcoming, I think, 313 card, or maybe even this weekend. I can't remember. You can tell me. Josh Van, I know, has got a fight coming up against Ray Saruya.
Yeah, that's 313.
313. You know, he could lose there, but I think Josh Van, what is he, 22, 23, yeah. something like that? He's very, very good. Carlos Praches, to me, another guy would be foolish to lose sight of. And then I have Sean O'Malley, and I have two more. I put asterisks by them because technically they don't qualify, but I think if we're planning again on the time horizon that I was looking at, which is up to potentially 5 years, Paul Hughes, Dakota Dicheva. I don't know if the PFL is going to be around forever, you know. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it won't be. They're gonna need to go somewhere, and they both have so much potential. And again, not this year, they're going to be PFL, whatever, but for 2026, 2027, who knows what the situation is going to look like. They might end up there, and if they do, I think they're automatically red hot additions to the UFC roster.
Yeah, great ones. My extras list, I had Armin Sarukian, who you mentioned, Nassourdine Imavov, who's 29 and ranked number one now, although I think he's got a connection to the fan base problem a little bit. Ian Gary, Cyril Gane, Piotr Jan, and then I did write a single snubs list. Someone who was not mentioned at all during this podcast, Luke, and is a current UFC champion, if we forgot, Juliana Pena. I don't know if I'd put her anywhere on the list, even in my top 30, but I was reading through and I was like, oh, if I was writing down a snub, she didn't even cross my mind when I was doing this exercise. So
women's bantamweight needs some help.
Yes, some help. To say the least. Okay, Luke, this was a lot of fun. I had a blast. I'd love to do this again, you know, like yearly or, you know, biannually or something, and see how this evolves and changes, because as I said off the top, only takes one result. So appreciate you being back here so much, man, and anything you want to plug before I let you go, I'll give you the floor to do that.
Just my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Luke Thomas. Check it out, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, great to see you, Luke. Appreciate your time, and we'll do it again soon, man. Thank you.
That sounds good.
That does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Luke for his time. I thought we had a blast there. Love seeing kind of the differences in approach and varying takes on how we added up our list there. Who do you guys think had it right? Whose top 10 crop would you hop on and want there? I know a lot of layover, but I thought the rankings were interesting and the explanations there. So appreciate everyone tuning in. Again, appreciate Luke's time. No plans to take another week off, so plan to be back here next week with another great show for you all as we get into the March schedule, which is of course highlighted by UFC 313, headlined by Alex Pereira and Megamed Ankalaev. We will talk, I'm sure, much about that for the next 2 weeks going in. I'll be out there in Las Vegas, but we can talk more about that later. For now, I hope you all enjoyed the show. Please make sure to show any support you can, a comment on our rankings, a upvote, a subscription on whatever platform, audio or video, you are listening to. It means the world to me as we keep pushing on the show. Thank you all for the support. Thank you for listening. And we will see you right back here next week by the Bonfire.